Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Book 5th of the Joyful Wisdom, Part 3. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. The Joyful Wisdom by Friedrich Nietzsche. Translated by Thomas Common. Book 5th. We Fearless Ones. 369. Juxtapositions in us. Must we not acknowledge to ourselves, we artists, that there is a strange discrepancy in us, that on the one hand our taste, and on the other hand our creative power, keep apart in an extraordinary manner, continue apart, and have a separate growth. I mean to say that they have entirely different gradations and tempi of age, youth, maturity, mellowness, and rottenness? So that, for example, a musician could all his life create things which contradict all that his ear and heart, spoiled as they are for listening, prize, relish, and prefer. He would not even require to be aware of the contradiction. As an almost painfully regular experience shows, a person's taste can easily outgrow the taste of his power, even without the latter being thereby paralyzed or checked in its productivity. The reverse, however, can also to some extent take place, and it is to this especially that I should like to direct the attention of artists. A constant producer, a man who is a, quote, mother, unquote, in the grand sense of the term, one who no longer knows or hears of anything except pregnancies and childbeds of his spirit, who has no time at all to reflect and make comparisons with regard to himself and his work, who is also no longer inclined to exercise his taste, but simply forgets it, letting it take its chance on standing, lying, or falling. Perhaps such a man at last produces work on which he is then not at all fit to pass a judgment, so that he speaks and thinks foolishly about them and about himself. This seems to me almost the normal condition with fruitful artists. No one knows a child worse than its parents, and the rule applies even, paren, to take an immense example, in paren, to the entire Greek world of poetry and art, which was never, quote, conscious, unquote, of what it had done. 370. What is Romanticism? It will be remembered, perhaps, at least among my friends, that at first I assailed the modern world with some gross errors and exaggerations, but at any rate with hope in my heart. I recognized, who knows from what personal experiences, the philosophical pessimism of the 19th century as the symptom of a higher power of thought, a more daring courage, and a more triumphant plenitude of life than had been characteristic of the 18th century, the age of Hume, Kant, Condillac, and the sensualists. So that the tragic view of things seemed to me the particular luxury of our culture, its most precious, noble, and dangerous mode of prodigality. but nevertheless, in view of its overflowing wealth, a justifiable luxury, in the same way I interpret for myself German music as the expression of a Dionysian power in the German soul. I thought I heard in it the earthquake by means of which a primeval force that had been imprisoned for ages was finally finding vent. Indifferent as to whether all that usually calls itself culture was thereby made to totter, it is obvious that I then misunderstood what constitutes the veritable character both of philosophical pessimism and of German music, namely their romanticism. What is romanticism? Every art and every philosophy may be regarded as a healing and helping appliance in the service of growing, struggling life. They always presuppose suffering and sufferers. But there are two kinds of sufferers. On the one hand, those who suffer from overflowing vitality, who need Dionysian art, and require a tragic view and insight into life. And, on the other hand, those who suffer from reduced vitality, who seek repose, quietness, calm seas, and deliverance from themselves through art or knowledge, or else intoxication, spasm, bewilderment, and madness. All romanticism in art and knowledge responds to the twofold craving of the latter. To them Schopenhauer as well as Wagner responded, and responds, to name those most celebrated and decided romanticists who were then misunderstood by me, not, however, to their disadvantage, as may be reasonably conceded to me, the being richest in overflowing vitality, the Dionysian god and man, may not only allow himself the spectacle of the horrible and questionable, but even the fearful deed itself, and all the luxury of destruction, disorganization, and negation. With him, evil, senselessness, and ugliness seem as it were licensed, in consequence of the overflowing plenitude of procreative, fructifying power, which can convert every desert into a luxuriant orchard. Conversely, the greatest sufferer, the man poorest in vitality, would have most need of mildness, peace, and kindliness in thought and action. He would need, if possible, a god, who is specially the god of the sick, a, quote, saviour, unquote. Similarly, he would have need of logic, the abstract intelligibility of existence, for logic soothes and gives confidence. In short, he would need a certain warm, fear-dispelling narrowness and imprisonment within optimistic horizons. In this manner I gradually begin to understand Epicurus, the opposite of a Dionysian pessimist. In a similar manner also the, quote, Christian, unquote, who in fact is only a type of Epicurean, and like him, essentially a romanticist. And my vision has always become keener in tracing that most difficult and insidious of all forms of retrospective inference, in which most mistakes have been made, the inference from the work to its author, from the deed to its doer, from the ideal to him who needs it. For every mode of thinking and valuing to the imperative want behind it, in regard to all aesthetic values, I now avail myself of this radical distinction. I ask in every single case, quote, has hunger or superfluidity become creative here? End quote. At the outset, another distinction might seem to recommend itself more. It is far more conspicuous, namely, to have in view whether the desire for rigidity or perpetuation, for being as a cause of the creating, or the desire for destruction, for change, for the new, for the future, for becoming. But when looked at more carefully, both these kinds of desire prove themselves ambiguous, and are explicable precisely according to the before-mentioned and, as it seems to me, rightly preferred scheme. The desire for destruction, change, and becoming may be the expression of overflowing power, pregnant with futurity. Paren, my terminus for this is of course the word, quote, Dionysian, unquote, end paren. But it may also be the hatred of the ill-constituted, destitute, and unfortunate, which destroys and must destroy, because the enduring, yea, all that endures, in fact all being, excites and provokes it. To understand this emotion, we have but to look closely at our anarchists. The will to perpetuation requires equally a double interpretation. It may, on the one hand, proceed from gratitude and love. Art of this origin will always be an art of apotheosis, perhaps dithyrambic, as with Rubens, mockingly divine, as with Hafiz, or clear and kind-hearted as with Goethe, and spreading a Homeric brightness and glory over everything. Paren, in this case I speak of Apollonian art, end paren. It may also, however, be the tyrannical will of a sorely suffering, struggling, or tortured being who would like to stamp his most personal, individual, and narrow characteristics, the very idiosyncrasy of his suffering, as an obligatory law and constraint on others, who, as it were, takes revenge on all things, in that he imprints, enforces, and brands his image, the image of his torture, upon them. The latter is romantic pessimism, in its most extreme form. Whether it be as Schopenhauerian will philosophy, or as Wagnerian music, romantic pessimism, the last great event in the destiny of our civilization. Paren, that there may be quite a different kind of pessimism, a classical pessimism, this presentiment and vision belongs to me, as something inseparable from me, as my properium and ipsissimum, only that the word, quote, classical, unquote, is repugnant to my ears. It has become far too worn, too indefinite, and indistinguishable. I call that pessimism of the future, for it is coming. I see it coming. Dionysian pessimism, end paren. 371. We unintelligible ones. Have we ever complained among ourselves of being misunderstood, misjudged, and confounded with others, of being calumniated, misheard, and not heard? That is just our lot, alas, for a long time yet. Say, to be modest, until 1901. It is also our distinction. We should not have sufficient respect for ourselves if we wished it otherwise. People confound us with others. The reason of it is that we ourselves grow, we change continually, we cast off old bark, we still slough every spring. We always become younger, higher, stronger. As men of the future, we thrust our roots always more powerfully into the deep, into evil, while at the same time we embrace the heavens ever more lovingly, more extensively, and suck in the light ever more eagerly with all our branches and leaves. We grow like trees, that is difficult to understand, like all life. Not in one place, but everywhere, not in one direction only, but upwards and outwards, as well as inwards and downwards. At the same time, our force shoots forth in stem, branches, and roots. We are really no longer free to do anything separately, or to be anything separately. Such is our lot. As we have said, we grow in height, and even should it be our calamity, for we dwell ever closer to the lightning, well, we honour it nonetheless on that account. It is that which we do not wish to share with others, which we do not wish to bestow upon others, the fate of all elevation, our fate. 372. Why we are not idealists. Formerly, philosophers were afraid of the senses. Have we, perhaps, been far too forgetful of this fear? We are at present, all of us, sensualists, we representatives of the present and of the future of philosophy, not according to theory, however, but in praxis. In practice. Those former philosophers, on the contrary, thought that the senses lured them out of their world, the cold realm of, quote, ideas, unquote, to a dangerous southern island, where they were afraid that their philosopher virtues would melt away like snow in the sun. Quote, wax in the ears, unquote, was then almost a condition of philosophizing. A genuine philosopher no longer listened to life, insofar as life is music. He denied the music of life. It is an old philosophical superstition that all music is siren's music. Now we should be inclined at the present day to judge precisely in the opposite manner, paren, which in itself might be just as false, in paren. And to regard ideas with their cold, anemic appearance, and not even in spite of this appearance, as worse seducers than the senses. They have always lived on the, quote, blood, unquote, of the philosopher. They always consumed his senses, and indeed, if you will believe me, his, quote, heart, unquote, as well. Those old philosophers were heartless. Philosophizing was always a species of vampirism. At the sight of such figures, even as Spinoza, do you not feel a profoundly enigmatical and disquieting sort of impression? Do you not see the drama which is here performed, the constantly increasing pallor, the spiritualization always more ideally displayed? Do you not imagine some long-concealed bloodsucker in the background, which makes its beginning with the senses, and in the end retains or leaves behind nothing but bones and their rattling? I mean categories, formulae, and words, paren, for you will pardon me in saying that what remains of Spinoza, amor intellectualis Dei, is rattling and nothing more. What is amor? What is Deus, when they have lost every drop of blood? In summer, all philosophical idealism has hitherto been something like a disease. Where it has not been, as in the case of Plato, the prudence of superabundant and dangerous healthfulness, the fear of overpowerful senses, and the wisdom of a wise Socratic. Perhaps it is the case that we moderns are merely not sufficiently sound to require Plato's idealism, and we do not fear the senses because... 373, quote, science, unquote, as prejudice. It follows from the laws of class distinction that the learned, in so far as they belong to the intellectual middle class, are debarred from getting even a sight of the really great problems and notes of interrogation. Besides, their courage, and similarly, their outlook does not reach so far. And above all, their need, which makes them investigators, their innate anticipation and desire that things should be constituted in such and such a way, their fears and hopes are too soon quieted and set at rest. For example, that which makes the pedantic Englishman, Herbert Spencer, so enthusiastic in this way, and impels him to draw a line of hope, a horizon of desirability, the final reconciliation of, quote, egotism and altruism, unquote, of which he dreams, that almost causes nausea to people like us. A humanity, with such Spencerian perspectives as ultimate perspectives, would seem to us deserving of contempt, of extermination. But the fact that something has to be taken by him as the highest hope, which is regarded, and may well be regarded, by others merely as a distasteful possibility, is a note of interrogation which Spencer could not have foreseen. It is just the same with the belief with which at present so many materialistic natural scientists are content, the belief in a world which is supposed to have its equivalent and measure in human thinking and human valuations, a, quote, world of truth, unquote, at which we might be able ultimately to arrive with the help of our insignificant, four-cornered human reason. What? Do we actually wish to have existence debased in that fashion, to be a ready reckoner exercise and calculation for stay-at-home mathematicians? We should not, above all, seek to divest the existence of its ambiguous character. Good taste forbids it, gentlemen, the taste of reverence for everything that goes beyond your horizon. That a world interpretation is alone right by which you maintain your position, by which investigation and work can go on scientifically in your sense, paren, you really mean mechanically, in paren, an interpretation which acknowledges numbering, calculating, weighing, seeing, and handling, and nothing more? Such an idea is a piece of grossness and naivety, provided it is not lunacy and idiocy. Would the reverse not be quite probable, that the most superficial and external characters of existence, its most apparent quality, its outside, its embodiment, should let themselves be apprehended first? Perhaps alone allow themselves to be apprehended? A, quote, scientific, unquote, interpretation of the world, as you understand it, might consequently still be one of the stupidest, that is to say, the most destitute of significance, of all possible world interpretations. I say this in confidence to my friends the mechanicians, who today like to hobnob with philosophers, and absolutely believe that mechanics is the teaching of the first and last laws upon which, as upon a ground floor, all existence must be built. But an essentially mechanical world would be an essentially meaningless world. Suppose we valued the worth of a music with reference to how much it could be counted, calculated, or formulated. How absurd would such a, quote, scientific, unquote, estimate of music would be? What would one have apprehended, understood, or discerned in it? Nothing, absolutely nothing, of what is really, quote, music, unquote, in it. 374. Our new, quote, infinite, unquote. How far the perspective character of existence extends, or whether it has any other character at all, whether an existence without explanation, without, quote, sense, unquote, does not just become, quote, nonsense, unquote, whether, on the other hand, all existence is not essentially an explaining existence. These questions, as is right and proper, cannot be determined even by the most diligent and severely conscientious analysis and self-examination of the intellect. Because in this analysis, the human intellect cannot avoid seeing itself in its perspective forms, and only in them. We cannot see round our corner. It is hopeless curiosity to want to know what other modes of intellect and perspective there might be. For example, whether any kind of being could perceive time backwards, or alternatively forwards and backwards, by which another direction of life and another conception of cause and effect would be given, But I think that we are today at least far from the ludicrous immodesty of decreeing from our nook that there can only be legitimate perspectives from that nook. The world, on the contrary, has once more become, quote, infinite, unquote, to us. In so far, we cannot dismiss the possibility that it contains infinite interpretations. Once more the great horror seizes us. But who would desire forthwith to deify once more this monster of an unknown world in the old fashion, and perhaps worship the unknown thing as the, quote, unknown person, unquote, in future? Ah, there are too many ungodly possibilities of interpretation comprised in this unknown. Too much devilment, stupidity, and folly of interpretation. Also, our own human, all too human interpretation itself, which we know. 375. Why we seem to be Epicureans. We are cautious, we modern men, with regard to final convictions. Our distrust lies in wait for the enchantments and tricks of conscience evolved in every strong belief, in every absolute yea and nay. How is this explained? Perhaps one may see in it a good deal of the caution of the, quote, burned child, unquote, of the disillusioned idealist. But one may also see in it another and better element, the joyful curiosity of a former lingerer in the corner, who has been brought to despair by his nook, and now luxuriates and revels in its antithesis, in the unbounded, in the, quote, open air in itself, unquote. Thus there is developed an almost Epicurean inclination for knowledge, which does not readily lose sight of the questionable character of things, likewise also a repugnance to pompous moral phrases and attitudes, a taste that repudiates all coarse, square contrasts, and is proudly conscious of its habitual reserve. For this too constitutes our pride, this easy tightening of the reins in our headlong impulse after certainty, this self-control of the rider in his most furious riding. For now, as of old, we have mad, fiery steeds under us, and if we delay, it is certainly least of all the danger which causes us to delay. 376. Our slow periods. It is thus that artists feel, and all men of, quote, works, unquote, the maternal species of men, they always believe that every chapter of their life, a work always makes a chapter, that they have already reached the goal itself. They would always patiently accept death with the feeling, quote, we are ripe for it, unquote. This is not an expression of exhaustion, but rather that of a certain autumnal sunniness and mildness, which the work itself, the maturing of the work, always leaves behind in its originator. Then the tempo of life slows down, turns thick and flows with honey, into long pauses, into the belief in the long pause. 377. We homeless ones. Among the Europeans of today, there are not lacking those who may call themselves homeless ones, in a way which is at once a distinction and an honour. It is by them that my secret wisdom and gaia scientia is expressly to be laid to heart. For their lot is hard, their hope uncertain. It is a clever feat to devise consolation for them, but what good does it do? We children of the future, how could we be at home in the present? We are unfavourable to all ideals which could make us feel at home in this frail, broken-down transition period. And as regards the, quote, realities, unquote, thereof, we do not believe in their endurance. The ice which still carries us has become very thin. The thawing wind blows. We ourselves, the homeless ones, are an influence that breaks the ice and the other all too thin, quote, realities, unquote. We, quote, preserve, unquote, nothing, nor would we return to any past age. We are not at all, quote, liberal, unquote. We do not labour for, quote, progress, unquote. We do not need first to stop our ears to the song of the marketplace and the sirens of the future, their song of, quote, equal rights, unquote, quote, free society, unquote, quote, no longer either lords or slaves, unquote, does not allure us. We do not by any means think of it desirable that the kingdom of righteousness and peace should be established on earth, because under any circumstance it would be the kingdom of the profoundest mediocrity and Chinaism. We rejoice in all men who, like ourselves, love danger, war, and adventure, who do not make compromises, nor let themselves be captured, conciliated, or stunted. We count ourselves among the conquerors. We ponder over the need for a new order of things, even of a new slavery. For every strengthening and elevation of the type, quote, man, unquote, also involves a new form of slavery. Is it not obvious that with all this we must feel ill at ease in an age which claims the honour of being the most humane, gentle, and just that the sun has ever seen? What a pity that at the mere mention of these fine words, the thoughts at the back of our minds are all the more unpleasant, that we see therein only the expression, or the masquerade, of profound weakening, exhaustion, age, and declining power. What can it matter to us with what kind of tinsel an invalid decks out his weakness? He may parade it as his virtue. There is no doubt whatever that weakness makes people gentle, alas, so gentle, so just, so inoffensive, so, quote, humane, unquote. The, quote, religion of pity, unquote, to which people would like to persuade us. Yes, we know sufficiently well the hysterical little men and women who need this religion at present as a cloak and adornment. We are no humanitarians. We should not dare to speak of our, quote, love of mankind, unquote. For that, a person of our stamp is not enough of an actor, or not sufficiently Saint-Simonist, not sufficiently French. A person must have been affected with a Gaelic excess of erotic susceptibility and amorous impatience, even to approach mankind honourably with his lewdness. Mankind! Was there ever a more hideous old woman among all old women? Unless perhaps it were, quote, the truth, unquote. A question for philosophers? No, we do not love mankind. On the other hand, however, we are not nearly, quote, German, unquote, enough. In the sense in which the word, quote, German, unquote, is current at present, to advocate nationalism and race hatred, or take delight in the national heart itch and blood poisoning, on account of which the nations of Europe are at present bounded off and secluded from one another as if by quarantines. We are too unprejudiced for that, too perverse, too fastidious, also too well informed, and too much, quote, travelled, unquote. We prefer much rather to live on mountains, apart and, quote, out of season, unquote, in past or coming centuries, in order merely to spare ourselves the silent rage to which we know we should be condemned as witnesses of a system of politics which makes the German nation barren by making it vain, and which is a petty system besides. Will it not be necessary for this system to plant itself between two mortal hatreds, lest its own creation should immediately collapse? Will it not be obliged to desire the perpetuation of the petty state system of Europe? We homeless ones are too diverse and mixed in race and descent as, quote, modern men, unquote, and are consequently little tempted to participate in the falsified race self-admiration and lewdness which at present displays themselves in Germany as signs of German sentiment, and which strike one as doubly false and unbecoming in the people with the, quote, historical sense, unquote. We are, in a word, and it shall be our word of honour, good Europeans, the heirs of Europe, the rich, over-wealthy heirs, also the too deeply pledged heirs of millenniums of European thought. As such, we have outgrown Christianity, and are disinclined to it, and just because we have grown out of it, because our forefathers were Christians uncompromising in their Christian integrity, who willingly sacrificed possessions and positions, blood and country, for the sake of their belief, we do the same. For what then? For our own unbelief? For all sorts of unbelief? Nay, ye know better than that, my friends. The hidden yea in you is stronger than all the nays and perhapses of which you and your age are sick. And when you are obliged to put out to sea, you immigrants, it is once more a faith which urges you thereto. 378. Quote, and once more grow clear. End quote. We, the generous and rich in spirit, who stand at the sides of the street like open fountains, and would hinder no one from drinking from us, we do not know, alas, how to defend ourselves when we should like to do so. We have no means of preventing ourselves being made turbid and dark. We have no means of preventing the age in which we live casting its, quote, up-to-date rubbish, unquote, into us, nor of hindering filthy birds throwing their excrement, the boys their trash, and the fatigued resting travellers their misery, great and small, into us. But we do as we have always done. We take whatever is cast into us down into our depths. For we are deep. We do not forget. And once more grow clear. 379. The Fool's Interruption. It is not a misanthrope who has written this book. The hatred of men costs too dear today. To hate, as they formerly hated man, in the fashion of Timon, completely, without qualification, with all the heart, from the pure love of hatred. For that purpose, one should have to renounce contempt. And how much refined pleasure, how much patience, how much benevolence, even, do we owe to contempt? Moreover, we are thereby the, quote, elect of God, unquote. Refined contempt is our taste and privilege, our art, our virtue, perhaps. We, the most modern among the moderns. Hatred, on the contrary, makes equal. It puts man face to face. In hatred, there is honour. Finally, in hatred, there is fear. Quite a large amount of fear. We fearless ones, however, we, the most intellectual men of the period, know our advantage well enough to live without fear, as the most intellectual persons of this age. People will not easily behead us, shut us up, or banish us. They will not even ban or burn our books. The age loves intellect. It loves us, and needs us, even when we have to give to it to understand that we are artists in despising, that all intercourse with men is something of a horror to us, that with all our gentleness, patience, humanity, and courteousness, we cannot persuade our nose to abandon its prejudice against the proximity of man, that we love nature the more, the less humanly things are done by her, and that we love art when it is the flight of the artist from man, or the raillery of the artist at man, or the raillery of the artist at himself. 380, quote, the wanderer, unquote, speaks. In order, for once, to get a glimpse of our European morality from a distance, in order to compare it with the other earlier or future moralities, we must do as a traveller who wants to know the height of the towers of a city. For that purpose, he leaves the city. Quote, thoughts concerning moral prejudices, unquote, if they are not to be prejudices concerning prejudices, presuppose a position outside of morality, some sort of world beyond good and evil, to which one must ascend, climb, or fly, and in the given case, at any rate, a position beyond our good and evil, an emancipation from all, quote, Europe, unquote, understood as a sum of inviolable valuations, which have become part and parcel of our flesh and blood, that one wants, in fact, to get outside or aloft, is perhaps a sort of madness, a peculiarly unreasonable, quote, thou must, unquote, for even we thinkers have our idiosyncrasies of, quote, unfree will, unquote. The question is whether one can really get there. That may depend on manifold conditions. In the main, it is a question of how light or how heavy we are, the problem of our, quote, specific gravity, unquote. One must be very light in order to impel one's will to knowledge to such a distance, and, as it were, beyond one's age, in order to create eyes for oneself for the survey of millenniums, and a pure heaven in these eyes besides. One must have freed oneself from many things by which we Europeans of today are oppressed, hindered, held down, and made heavy. The man of such a, quote, beyond, unquote, who wants to get even in sight of the highest standards of worth of his age, must first of all, quote, surmount, unquote, this age in himself. It is a test of his power, and consequently not only his age, but also his past aversion and opposition to his age, his suffering caused by his age, his unseasonableness, his romanticism. 381. The question of intelligibility. One not only wants to be understood when one writes, but also, quite certainly, not to be understood. It is by no means an objection to a book when someone finds it unintelligible. Perhaps this might just have been the intention of its author. Perhaps did he not want to be understood by, quote, anyone, unquote. A distinguished intellect and taste, when it wants to communicate its thoughts, always selects its hearers. By selecting them, it at the same time closes its barriers against, quote, the others, unquote. It is there that all the more refined laws of style have their origin. They at the same time keep off. They create distance. They prevent, quote, access, unquote. Paren, intelligibility, as we have said, end paren. While they open the ears of those who are acoustically related to them, and to say it, between ourselves and with reference to my own case, I do not desire that either my ignorance or the vivacity of my temperament should prevent me from being understood by you. My friends, I certainly do not desire that my vivacity should have that effect, however much it may impel me to arrive quickly at an object, in order to arrive at it at all. For I think it best to do with profound problems as with a cold bath, quickly in, quickly out, that one does not thereby get down into the depths, that one does not get deep enough down, is a superstition of the hydrophobic, the enemies of cold water. They speak without experience. Oh, the great cold makes one quick. And let me ask, by the way, is it a fact that a thing has been misunderstood and unrecognized when it has only been touched upon in passing, glanced at, flashed at? Must one absolutely sit upon it in the first place? Must one have brooded on it as on an egg? Dine you noctuique incubando, as Newton said of himself? At least there are truths of a peculiar shyness and ticklishness which one can only get hold of suddenly and in no other way, which one must either take by surprise or leave alone. Finally, my brevity has still another value. On those questions which preoccupy me, I must say a great deal briefly, in order that it may be heard yet more briefly. For, as immoralist, one has to take care lest one ruins innocence. I mean the asses and old maids of both sexes, who get nothing from life but their innocence. Moreover, my writings are meant to fill them with enthusiasm, to elevate them, to encourage them to virtue. I should be at a loss to know of anything more amusing than to see enthusiastic old asses and maids moved by the sweet feelings of virtue, and, quote, that have I seen, unquote, spake Zarathustra. So much with respect to brevity. The matter stands worse as regards my ignorance, of which I make no secret to myself. There are hours in which I am ashamed of it. To be sure, there are likewise hours in which I am ashamed of this shame. Perhaps we philosophers, all of us, are badly placed at present with regard to knowledge. Science is growing. The most learned of us are on the point of discovering that we know too little. But it would be worse still if it were otherwise. If we knew too much, our duty is and remains, first of all, not to get into confusion about ourselves. We are different from the learned, although it cannot be denied that amongst other things we are also learned. We have different needs, a different growth, a different digestion. We need more. We need also less. There is no formula as to how much an intellect needs for its nourishment. If, however, its taste be in the direction of independence, rapid coming and going, travelling, and perhaps adventure for which only the swiftest are qualified, it prefers rather to live free on poor fare than to be unfree and plethoric. Not fat, but the greatest suppleness and power is what a good dancer wishes from his nourishment, and I know not what the spirit of a philosopher would like better than to be a good dancer. For the dance is his ideal, and also his art, in the end likewise his sole piety, his, quote, divine service, unquote. 382. Great healthiness. We, the new, the nameless, the hard to understand, we firstlings of a yet untried future, we require for a new end also a new means, namely, a new healthiness, stronger, sharper, tougher, bolder, and merrier than any healthiness hitherto. He whose soul longs to experience the whole range of hitherto recognized values and desirabilities, and to circumnavigate all coasts of this ideal, quote, Mediterranean Sea, unquote, who, from the adventures of his most personal experience, wants to know how it feels to be a conqueror and discoverer of the ideal, as likewise how it is with the artist, the saint, the legislator, the sage, the scholar, the devotee, the prophet, and the godly nonconformist of the old style, requires one thing above all for that purpose, great healthiness. Such healthiness as one not only possesses, but also constantly acquires and must acquire, because one continually sacrifices it again, and must sacrifice it. And now, after having been long on the way in this fashion, we Argonauts of the ideal, who are more courageous perhaps than prudent, and often enough shipwrecked and brought to grief, nevertheless, as said above, healthier than people would like to admit, dangerously healthy, always healthy again, it would seem, as if in recompense for it all, that we have still an undiscovered country before us, the boundary of which no one has yet seen, a beyond all countries and corners of the ideal known hitherto, a world so over-rich in the beautiful, the strange, the questionable, the frightful, and the divine, that our curiosity as well as our thirst for possession thereof has got out of hand, alas, that nothing will now any longer satisfy us. How could we still be content with the man of the present day after such peeps, with such a craving in our conscience and consciousness? What a pity, but it is unavoidable, that we should look on the worthiest aims and hopes of man of the present day with an ill-concealed amusement, and perhaps should no longer look at them. Another ideal runs on before us, a strange, tempting ideal, full of danger, to which we should not like to persuade anyone, because we do not so readily acknowledge anyone's right thereto. The ideal of a spirit who plays naively, paren, that is to say, involuntarily, and from overflowing abundance and power, en paren, with everything that has hitherto been called holy, good, inviolable, divine, to whom the loftiest conception which the people have reasonably made their measure of value would already imply danger, ruin, abasement, or at least relaxation, blindness, or temporary self-forgetfulness. The ideal of a humanly superhuman welfare and benevolence, which may often enough appear inhuman. For example, when put by the side of all past seriousness on earth, and in comparison with all past solemnities in bearing, word, tone, look, morality, and pursuit, as their truest involuntary parody, but with which, nevertheless, perhaps the great seriousness only commences, the proper interrogation mark is set up, the fate of the soul changes, the hour hand moves, and tragedy begins. 383. Epilogue. While I slowly, slowly finish the painting of this sombre interrogation mark, and am still inclined to remind my readers of the virtue of right reading. Oh, what forgotten and unknown virtues! It comes to pass that the wickedest, merriest, gnome-like laughter resounds around me. The spirits of my book themselves pounce upon me, pull me by the ears, and call me to order. "We cannot endure it any longer," they shouted me. "Away, away with this raven black music! Is it not clear morning around us? And green, soft ground and turf, the domain of the dance? Was there ever a better hour in which to be joyful? Who will sing us a song, a morning song, so sunny, so light, so fledged that it will not scare the tantrums, but will, rather, invite them to take part in the singing and dancing? And better a simple rustic bagpipe than such weird sounds, such toad croakings, grey voices, and marmot pipings, with which you have hitherto regaled us in your wilderness, Mr. Anchorite and musician of the future. No, not such tones. But let us strike up a thing more agreeable and more joyful." You would like to have it so, my impatient friends? Well, who would not willingly accord with your wishes? My bagpipe is waiting, and my voice also. It may sound a little hoarse, take it as it is. Don't forget we are in the mountains. But what you will hear is at least new. And if you do not understand it, if you misunderstand the singer, what does it matter? That has always been, quote, the singer's curse, unquote. Translator's footnote, title of the well-known poem of Uhland. End footnote. So much the more distinctly can you hear his music and melody. So much the better also can you dance to his piping. Would you like to do that? End of Book 5. We Fearless Ones. Appendix of The Joyful Wisdom. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. The Joyful Wisdom by Friedrich Nietzsche, translated by Thomas Common, poetry rendered by Paul V. Cohen and Maud D. Peter. Appendix. Songs of Prince Free as a Bird. To Goethe. The undecaying is but thy label, God the betraying is poet's fable. Our aims are all thwarted by the world wheel's blind roll. Doom, say the downhearted, sport, say the fool. The world's sport all-ruling mingles false with true. The eternal fooling makes us play too. Translator's footnote. This poem is a parody of the Chorus Mysticus, which concludes the second part of Goethe's Faust. Bayard Taylor's translation of the passage in Faust runs as follows. All things transitory, but as symbols are sent, earth's insufficiency here grows to event, the indescribable here it is done, the woman's soul leadeth us upward and on. The Poet's Call. As neath a shady tree I sat, after long toil to take my pleasure, I hear a tapping pitter-pat beat prettily in rhythmic measure. Though first I scowled, my face set hard, the sound at length my sense entrapping forced me to speak like any bard and keep true time unto the tapping. As I made verses never stopping, each syllable the bird went after, keeping time with dainty hopping, I burst into unmeasured laughter. What, you a poet? You a poet? Can your brains truly so addled be? Yes, yes, good sir, you are a poet, chirped out the pecker, mocking me. What doth me to these words entice? The chance to give some thief a trouncing? A saw, an image? Ha! In a trice my rhyme is on it, swiftly pouncing. All things that creep or crawl, the poet weaves in his word loom cunningly. Yes, yes, good sir, you are a poet, chirped out the pecker, mocking me. Like to an arrow, methinks, a verse is. See how it quivers, pricks and smarts, when shot full straight. No tender mercies, into the reptile's nobler parts. Wretches, you die at the hand of the poet, or stagger like men that have drunk too free. Yes, yes, good sir, you are a poet, chirped out the pecker, mocking me. So they go hurrying, stanzas malign, drunken words with a clattering banging, till the whole company, line on line, all on the rhythmic chain are hanging. Has he really a cruel heart, your poet? Are there fiends who rejoice the slaughter to see? Yes, yes, good sir, you are a poet, chirped out the pecker, mocking me. So you jested me, bird, with your scornful graces? So sore indeed is the plight of my head? And my heart, you say, in yet sorrier cases? Beware, for my wrath is a thing to dread. Yet e'en in the hour of his wrath the poet rhymes you and sings with the self-same glee. Yes, yes, good sir, you are a poet, chirped out the pecker, mocking me. In the South. I swing on the bough and rest my tired limbs in a nest, in the rocking home of a bird, wherein I perch as his guest in the South. I gaze on the ocean asleep, on the purple sail of a boat, on the harbour and tower steep, on the rocks that stand out of the deep in the South. For I could no longer stay to crawl in slow German way, so I called to the birds, bade the wind lift me up and bear me away to the South. No reasons for me, if you please. Their end is too dull and too plain, but a pair of wings and a breeze, with courage and health and ease, and games that chase disease from the South. Wise thoughts can move without sound, but I've songs that I can't sing alone, so birdies, pray gather around, and listen to what I've found in the South. You are merry lovers, and false and gay, in frolics and sport you pass the day, whilst in the North I shudder to say, I worshipped a woman, hideous and grey, her name was Truth, so I heard them say, but I left her there, and flew away to the South. Footnote, translated by Miss M. D. Peter, inserted by permission of the editor of The Nation, in which it appeared on April 17th, 1909. End footnote. Beppa the Pious. While beauty in my face is, be piety my care, for God, you know, loves lasses, and more than all, the fair. And if yon hapless monkling is fain with me to live, like many another monkling, God surely will forgive. No grey old priestly devil, but young, with cheeks aflame, who e'en when sick with revel, can jealous be and blame. To greybeards I'm a stranger, and he, too, hates the old, of God, the world arranger, the wisdom here behold. The church has ken of living, and tests by heart and face, to me she'll be forgiving. Who will not show me grace? I lisp with petty halting, I curtsy, bid good day, and with the fresh defaulting, I wash the old away. Praise be this man God's guerdon, who loves all maidens fair, and his own heart can pardon the sin he planted there. While beauty in my face is, with piety I'll stand. When age has killed my graces, let Satan claim my hand. The Boat of Mystery. Yester-eve, when all things slept, scarce a breeze to stir the lane, I a restless vigil kept, nor from pillows sleep could gain, nor from poppies, nor, most sure, of opiates, a conscience pure. Thoughts of rest I gain forswear, rose and walked along the strand, found, in warm and moonlit air, man and boat upon the sand, drowsy both, and drowsily did the boat put out to sea. Past an hour or two perchance, or a year, then thought and sensed vanished in the engulfing trance of a vast indifference, fathomless, abysses dread opened. Then the vision fled. Morning came, becalmed, the boat rested on the purple flood. What had happened? Every throat shrieked the question. Was there blood? Naught had happened. On the swell we had slumbered, oh, so well. An avowal of love, paren, during which, however, the poet fell into a pit. End paren. O marvel! There he flies, cleaving the sky with wings unmoved. What force impels him, bids him rise? What curb restrains him? Where's his goal, his course? Like stars and time etern, he liveth now in heights that life forswore, nor envy's self doth spurn a lofty flight wert even to see him soar. O albatross, great bird, speeding me upward ever through the blue, I thought of her, was stirred to tears unending, yea, I love her true. Song of a Theocritian Goatherd. Here I lie, my bowels sore, hosts of bugs advancing, yonder lights and romp and roar. What's that sound? They're dancing. At this instant she so prated, stealthily she met me. Like a faithful dog I've waited, not a sign to greet me. She promised, made the cross sign too. Could her vows be hollow? Or runs she after all that woo, like the goats I follow? Whence your silken gown, my maid? Ah, you'd fain be haughty, yet perchance you've proved a jade with some satyr naughty. Waiting long, the lovelorn rite is filled with rage and poison. Even so on sultry night toadstools grow in foison. Pinching sore in devil's mood, love doth plague my crupper. Truly I can eat no food, farewell, onion supper. Seaward sinks the moon away, the stars are wan and flare not. Dawn approaches, gloomy, grey, let death come, I care not. Souls that lack determination. Souls that lack determination rouse my wrath to white-hot flame, all their glories but vexation, all their praise but self-contempt and shame. Since I baffle their advances, will not clutch their leading string, they would wither me with glances bitter-sweet and hopeless envy sting. Let them with fell curses shiver, curl their lip the livelong day, seek me as they will, for ever helplessly their eyes will go astray. The Fool's Dilemma. Ah, what I wrote on board and wall with foolish heart, in foolish scrawl, I meant but for their decoration. But you say, fool's abomination, both board and wall require purgation, and let no trace our eyes appall. Well, I will help you as I can, for sponge and broom are my vocation, as critic and as waterman. but when the finished work I scan, I am glad to see each learned owl with wisdom board and wall defoul. Remus Remedum, paren, or a consolation to sick poets, end paren. From thy moist lips, O time, thou witch, beslavering me, hour upon hour too slowly drips in vain, I cry, in frenzy's fit, a curse upon that yawning pit, a curse upon eternity. The worlds of brass, a fiery bullock deaf to wail, pain's dagger pierces my cuirass, winged, and writes upon my bone, bowels and heart, the world hath none, why scourge her sins with anger's flail? Poor poppies now, poor venom, fever on my brain, too long you test my hand and brow, what you ask, what reward is paid? A malediction on you, jade, and your disdain. No, I retract, 'tis cold, I hear the rain importune. Fever, I'll soften, show my tact. Here's gold, a coin, see it gleam. Shall I with blessings on you beam, call you good fortune? The door opes wide, and raindrops on my bed are scattered, the light's blown out, woes multiplied. He that hath not 100 rhymes, I wager, on this doldrum times, will see him shattered. My bliss. Once more, Saint Mark, thy pigeons meet my gaze. The square lies still, in slumbering morning mood. In soft, cool air I fashion idle lays, speeding them skyward like a pigeon's brood, and then recall my minions to tie fresh rhymes upon thy willing pinions. My bliss, my bliss! Calm heaven, roof of azure silkenness, guarding with shimmering haze yon house divine, thee house I love, fear, envy, I confess, and gladly will I suck out thy soul of thine. Should I give back the prize? Ask not, great pasture ground for human eyes, my bliss, my bliss. Stern belfry, rising as with lion's leap, sheer from the soil in easy victory, that fillest the square with peal resounding, deep, wert thou in French that square's accent ague? Were I for ages set in earth like thee, I know what silk mesh net. My bliss, my bliss! Hence, music! First let darker shadows come and grow and merge into brown, mellow night. 'Tis early for your pealing, ere the dome sparkle in roseate glory, gold bedelight. While yet 'tis day, there's time for strolling, lonely muttering, forging rhyme, my bliss, my bliss. Columbus Redivivus. Thither I'll travel, that's my notion, I trust myself, my grip, where opens wide and blue the ocean, I ply my Genoa ship. New things on new the world unfolds to me, time, space with noonday die, alone thy monstrous eye beholds me, awful infinity. Sils Maria. Here sat I waiting, waiting, but for naught, beyond all good and evil, now by light wrought to joy, now by dark shadows, all was leisure, all lake, all noon, all time sans aim, sans measure. Then one dear friend was swiftly changed to twain, and Zarathustra left my teeming brain. A dancing song to the mistral wind. Wildly rushing, clouds outleaping, care destroying, heaven sweeping, mistral wind, thou art my friend. Surely 'twas one womb did bear us, surely 'twas one fate did pair us, fellows for a common end. From the crags I gaily greet you, running fast I come to meet you, dancing while you pipe and sing, how you bound across the ocean, unimpeded, free in motion, swifter than with boat or wing. Through my dreams your whistle sounded, down the rocky stairs I bounded to the golden ocean wall, saw you hasten swift and glorious, like a river, strong, victorious, tumbling in a waterfall. Saw you rushing over heaven, with your steeds so wildly driven, saw the car in which you flew, saw the lash that wheeled and quivered, while the hand that held it shivered, urging on the steeds anew. Saw you from the chariot swinging, so that swifter downwards springing like an arrow you might go straight down into deep abysses, as a sunbeam falls and kisses roses in the morning glow. Dance, oh, dance on all the edges, wave crests, cliffs, and mountain ledges, ever finding dances new. Let our knowledge be our gladness, let our art be sport and madness, all that's joyful shall be true. Let us snatch from every bower, as we pass, the fairest flower, with some leaves to make a crown. Then, like minstrels gaily dancing, saint and witch together prancing, let us foot it up and down. Those who come must move as quickly as the wind, we'll have no sickly, crippled, withered in our crew. Off with hypocrites and preachers, proper folk and prosy teachers, sweep them from our heaven blue. Sweep away all sad grimaces, whirl the dust into the faces of the dismal sick and cold. Hunt them from our breezy places, not for them the wind that braces, but for men of visage bold. Off with those who spoil earth's gladness, blow away all clouds of sadness, tell our heaven clear we see. Let me hold thy hand, best fellow, tell my joy like tempest bellow, freest thou of spirits free. When thou partest, take a token of the joy thou hast awoken. Take our wreath and fling it far, toss it up and catch it never, whirl it on before thee ever, till it reach the furthest star. Footnote, translated by Miss M. D. Peter, inserted by permission of the editor of The Nation, in which it appeared on May the 15th, 1909. End footnote. End of appendix. Songs of Prince Free as a Bird. Recording by Tim Sherman Chase. Website sherman-chase.org.uk. End of The Joyful Wisdom by Friedrich Nietzsche, translated by Thomas Common. Poetry rendered by Paul V. Cohen and Maud D. Peter.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.